Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at carvana.com.
I've got a big flood in the north of England.
Fresh!
And I've got what's playing at the Roxy. I'll tell you what's playing at the Roxy after during the actual bit. Yes. Yes, I will.
That's a good idea. Nice.
I'll save it for then.
Hello there, welcome to Date Fight. It's the podcast that takes great things that happened on this day, but in the past, and pitches them against each other, actually.
Yes, it is. He is Jake Yap, I am Nat Tapley, and together we have opened two tins of cat food and have placed them in front of you to see which one you'll eat, if either, rather than just rejecting them and pretending you haven't been fed for weeks. I have a cat.
I can't go on. I love that.
All right, I'm going to take you to the 11th of March, 1927, and the opening of the Roxy Theatre in New York City, which was meant to be the world's largest and finest movie palace. It was opened by Samuel L. Rothafel, whose nickname was Roxy, and it had 6,000 seats, and it went $2.5 million over budget in 1927 dollars, which is
crikey.
Quite a lot of dollars.
That's
in
like $4 million, yeah.
Yeah. It had the world's largest oval rug. It had a pipe organ in the mezzanine. There were two stories of private dressing rooms, three stories of chorus dressing rooms. There was a staff dry cleaning. There was a cafeteria, a gymnasium, a billiard room, a tap room for the staff. There was a library and shoe shining. That was probably just a child. That's probably not a room. There was a rising orchestra pit with room for 120 performers.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And there were an organ with three consoles, which could be played simultaneously. So you could have three people simultaneously playing the organ. Every week...
three people on one organ.
I've seen a video like that.
Where?
I'm not telling.
Where?
They had uniformed ushers who were daily drilled by a retired Marine sergeant. And every week, there was the Roxy Hour, broadcast from the Roxy Theatre, New York, on NBC. However, with the Wall Street crash in 1929, nobody had any money, and so very quickly it ran out of money and had to do other things, like they had to build an ice skating rink in it. Samuel Rothafel, Roxy, took his dance troupe and moved down the road to the RKO Radio City Music Hall in 1932, and he started the Radio City Music Hall and made that the venue that it is today. But the Roxy, which at the time was the most famous cinema in the world, fell into disuse and is currently a TGI Fridays.
Oh, that's very sad.
It is a bit, isn't it?
Is it a TGI Fridays with a three-console organ and a drill sergeant?
I don't think so. It may have a child to shine your shoes, but that's about it.
For legal reasons, no, it doesn't. Right.
What have you got?
I've got something very unhappy and sad. Bye-bye.
No.
It's the 11th of March, 1864, and
I'm there.
The Great Sheffield Flood.
Oh.
It kills, I'm sad to report, 238 people.
Oh.
And only due to idiocy.
Oh.
So there was this newly built dam. It was called the Dale Dyke Dam.
Mm-hmm.
Because
Dale Dyke Dam.
A bit of alliteration.
Yeah.
And it was indeed in 3D. And they were filling the dam for the first time.
How do you fill a dam? Yes, how do you fill a dam?
Well, what you do is you build a dam with a hole in the bottom, you know, and a tap, and then you turn the tap off when you're ready to fill up the dam.
Right.
So there was this guy, John Gunson, he was the resident engineer there, and they were filling up this dam in the evening, and Gunson said, there's a quite a big crack in the outer slope of the embankment.
Oh. And they went, well, you're the engineer.
And then Gunson said to himself, "Nah, I'll turn the tap on a bit, and then it'll be all right." So he opened up the valves in the middle of the embankment to allow more water through.
Yeah.
And, oh, crack's not bad. Crack's all right. The crack. Whoops-a-daisy, there go 3 million cubic meters of water. It destroyed everything in its course. So it was the center of the town of Low Bradfield. It destroyed a district called Wicker, and it was a really horrendous thing, and I'm very sorry.
But a gift to alliteration-loving headline writers who could write Dale Dyke Dam Drowns Dozens.
Yeah, I think, wasn't Dale's Dyke Dam a 90s game show with Dale Winton?
Dale Dam's Dykes.
Let's meet our lucky... No. I don't know. I'd like to reassure people that I sound drunk, and I am a little bit drunk, but I'm mainly tired.
Okay. 2 days back.
Yeah, but I'm only a little bit drunk, mostly
Let's
tired.
Let's do the birthdays. You can have a snooze while I do them. Happy birthday to John Barrowman. Happy birthday, John Barrowman.
I love you now.
I love you too. John Barrowman, who really...
I'm sorry, did I say something?
Who really embodies musical theatre, being hollow, expensive and much more comfortable with thuddingly obvious exposition than any real emotion. Happy birthday, John Barrowman. Happy birthday...
Wait, why are you so not a fan of John Barrowman?
He's everything I dislike about musical theatre. And I don't dislike much.
Why?
Because he takes the glee and makes it sanitised and makes it applicable, acceptable to a family audience and charges you a lot for it. And there's nothing real going on behind the eyes apart from a sort of slight desperation that maybe you're not noticing this enough and enjoying it enough. And it all seems rather fragile and hollow. And I've gone too far with this. I'm revealing far too much. Okay, happy birthday, though.
It's interesting. I love that you say he sanitises stuff when he's the guy who I think posted on his profile picture or something on some kind of, you know, meet up with friends forum of some kind. I've got a hungry...
And that donkey has never looked back. Happy birthday to you, John Barrowman.
Who would it have seen?
I didn't mean a word. You're a lovely man, and don't let this affect in any way your sense of self-worth. Happy birthday.
I like John Barrowman.
Happy birthday to Raoul Walsh, who we discussed before. He was the actor who was in the first gangster film in 1915. He played John Wilkes Booth in Birth of a Nation, and he was playing the Cisco Kid when a jackrabbit jumped through the window of his car, attacked him.
Oh, yeah.
And he lost the part to Warner Baxter, who got the Oscar for it. Still, he went on to be a director who wore an eye patch, which is possibly the coolest thing to be, an eye patch wearing director.
It's only one eye in director.
Yep. Happy birthday to Henry Tate, a businessman and philanthropist. According to Wikipedia, he started Tate and Lyle, and I really looked to find out if he were really evil in some way, and I couldn't find anything apart from obviously the basic evil of being involved in the sugar trade, which probably involves enforced labour and the fattening of people. But apart from that, he gave all of his money away, pretty much. He started the Tate Gallery. He gave his entire collection of art to the state. He funded many education charities and hospitals. He purchased the patent for making sugar cubes. So I've probably gone off the boil because Henry Tate seems like he was probably an okay Victorian.
That's incredible.
Maybe the first one we've had. He gave all of his money to good works, and he was interested in his workers' conditions. He organised days off for them. He seems like generally a good Victorian. We found one.
And he was very good in Torchwood, Nat.
Yeah. Nobody was very good in Torchwood. You take that back.
I like Torchwood.
Gaptooth Gwen was terrible. They were all awful.
Oh, wow. Mate, which part were you up for?
Let's not talk about it. Happy Death Day to Friedrich Merz.
Were you John Barrowman's love interest?
No, it was Yanto Jones. Happy Death Day to Friedrich Murnau, the World War I flying ace turned director. He didn't have an eye patch, he just directed Nosferatu and Faust and other things. Happy death day to King Bodopaya, king of Burma. Until his death in 1819, he had 62 sons and 58 daughters. Take that, Henry VIII, you idiot.
That's exactly 100.
It's 110.
I know, I was fast. No, it's not. It's 120.
Is it? You were right. It's 120. We're both terrible.
I'm drunk slash tired.
I've just been infected by the giggly glee with which we're so happily setting fire to the format.
I'm so sorry. I'll be back tomorrow, I promise.
Happy Death Day.
I genuinely didn't realise I was in this state before we began.
Happy death day to Elagabalus. He's everyone's favourite Roman Empire, the priest from the east. He was made emperor when he was 14 years old. And oddly enough, his reign was known for sex scandals. He was married 5 times, took male lovers, prostituted himself out in the imperial palace. To which the answer is, don't make a 14-year-old boy the emperor.
Yeah.
Everything will... They will have sex with everything. And make it policy that everyone else
I heard he had one hugely opulent, ornate room in the palace that had nothing but 3-day-old pot noodles in it. Is that
pictures
right?
Pictures of Janet Ellis. Anyway, he was assassinated at age 18. Assassinated at age 18 with his mother, and they both thrown in the Tiber. Happy death day to Elagabalus.
Oh, my. Oh, God. I take you to the end of March 2004,
Nat. I hope it's another big death
one. Many die as bombs destroy trains in Madrid. God. Yes, that's right. 2,000 people in total dead or injured. I mean, absolutely seismically awful. In the end, they realised, there were sort of reports like, there's been a bomb, 2 bombs, 4 bombs now. There were 10 bombs. It was an extremely well-coordinated attack. And the thing was that the police had actually, 12 days earlier, intercepted a van bound for Madrid, packed with explosives. And they were like, oh, it's fine, it's ETA. Obviously, they impounded the explosives. They're like, this is definitely ETA. And in fact, they publicly blamed ETA, but it wasn't them. It was at least one group claiming they had links to Al-Qaeda.
Oh.
So, and they did find an Arabic tape with Quranic quotes found in a suspect van near Madrid.
That's more than enough evidence for us. That's all we need to know.
Yeah, I mean, a letter by Al-Qaeda was sent to a London newspaper that did refer to some attacks that the code name of which was called Operation Death Trains, which might be a clue.
What's that about then? Give me a bit more information about Operation Death Trains.
Yeah. 3 days later, the government was toppled in an election because the public felt they'd been misled because they'd said that ETA was to blame. So it actually changed the whole administration, and that's why I win, guys.
I'm going to take you to the 11th.
Winning feels good.
The 11th of March, 1708, when Queen Anne vetoed the Scottish Militia Bill. It was a bill to arm the Scottish militia. It had passed both houses. But then news came that France was planning on invading, and Queen Anne didn't want the Scots to have any arms, so she refused to sign it, and it was vetoed. And that was the last time the monarch vetoed a bill. They say that. We say that was the last time monarch vetoed a bill. However, the current queen in 1999 just refused to sign a private member's bill, in which was to transfer official war-making power from the monarch to Parliament. Her spokesman said, "Oh no, she's never vetoed a government bill, but she does quite regularly pass her eye over non-government bills, private members' bills, and decide whether or not she feels like signing them." So, although 1708 was the last time the monarch ever vetoed a bill that had or refused to give royal assent to a bill had passed the House of Commons, it wasn't. It happens all the time. Over the past 10 years, the Queen and Prince Charles have had to approve changes to child benefits, to national insurance, to paternity leave, to all sorts of things. More than a dozen bills between 2007 and 2009 were Prince Charles had a quick look at before they actually got to go through the House of Commons. Anyway, that was 1708, the last time the monarchy interfered in government. or was it?
Was it? Yeah.
Orders in Council. I mean, you've already done Orders in Council. That was months ago. We did Orders in Council.
Yes, we've done The People of Diego Garcia. Is that what I mean?
It was Diego Garcia. Yep, that's right. Orders in Council and all the rest. What a brilliant system we've got. It's working so well.
Mate, it's actually one of the best. Oh, whatever. Right. Speaking of democracies.
Yes.
If maybe just run the results of this week's votes by me before you announce them on Sunday's show now.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah. You could take a look at them because they do affect you. So
just a quick look. Yeah, just so a quick look.
You'll have to sign them off.
Yeah, that'd be great. You can vote on today's Earth.
You can vote on Twitter at date_fight or at facebook.com/datefight. At both of those places, not Facebook, you won't, because you can't put polls on Facebook anymore because Facebook are awful.
That's bizarre.
It saved me a lot of work, though, so in some ways, thanks, Facebook. I know, and you have to do half the adding. Do vote, join in, and if you really enjoyed today's show, go to patreon.com/datefight and give us some money. That would be lovely. Thank you very much. See you soon. Bye.
Yes, by the way, we are just about to start recording our bonus podcast.
Yes.
For Patreons, Two Dads in the History Shed.
In your ears,
gaining a bit of a cult following. So if you want to get your hands on this month's, now's a great time to sign up. What's the address for Patreon one more time, Nat?
And it's patreon.com/datefight.
There you go. We will see you tomorrow for another one.
See you
Take
tomorrow.
Care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hold it together. Yeah. Christ. I love you. I'm sorry.
I love you too. That's all right.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.